Committee on Ways and Means. Open a hearing on SB 5506, the Department of Community Colleges and Workforce Development. Apologize for the committee for running late, and to staff and to members of the audience and the rest of my Senate members.
What?
So we will go ahead and get started. Mr. Bender.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. You have 2 days scheduled for your Phase 2 discussions of the Department of Community Colleges and Workforce Development. And I'd like to sort of start off that discussion by providing you with some background information that I hope will be very helpful to you as you look through this budget. I don't want to take up too much of your committee time this morning, though, because of the fact that there are only 2 days set aside for this Phase 2. But I think, hopefully, that this presentation will help you as you work through the issues of this budget. And what I would like to do is basically talk about the budget at the 500,000-foot level and just talk a bit about where the monies are coming from and how what they're used for. And then for the remainder of the presentation, you will next hear from Bill McGee from Budget and Management Division, who will discuss in more detail what was in the governor's recommendation. And then you will hear the greatest degree of detail when the commissioner, Kemp Hrusbrolly, comes to speak after Mr. McGee. But I would ask you, please, to look at, I've distributed a couple of items to you. I've actually distributed 3 items to you. One of them is just the excerpt from our analysis of the governor's recommended budget on community colleges, which you may want to look at and which has some information on the agency and on the budget as the governor proposed it back in December. But what I would like to ask you to look at right now and to focus on are these two colored sheets that I've distributed to you. And I'd like to start off the one that looks like this, that has 2 pie charts on the front and is labeled CCWD funding. It's a 2-page pie chart. And what this pie chart is showing, on the first of the 2 pages, it shows what is in the budget for the Department of Community Colleges and Workforce Development. These are the funds that you actually approve in your budgetary process. This shows them for two different situations. One is the 03-05 biennium, the biennium that's closing out soon. And the next one is a proposal for 05-07 under the Senate co-chair's plan. That was just one of the proposals, and I put that one in there. We'll be talking a bit more about what's in the Senate co-chair plan and what's in the House co-chair plan and what's in the governor's budget in just a few minutes. But if I could just direct you to this, you'll see that most of the funding for the in the department's budget is general fund. And most of this general fund, it turns out, is transferred directly to community colleges through the Community College Support Fund. In the technical term in the state budget for this type of transfer is a special payment, which is to say the monies are actually transferred to some other entity and they're not being spent by the Department of Community Colleges and Workforce Development. But that's what most of the general funds are used for. General funds are used for other things as well, including financing the administrative costs that are within the Department of Community Colleges and Workforce Development. So it's not all of the money that's transferred, just most of it. There are other fund sources there, too. You can see there's a small amount of other funds, about $13.5 million. And these other funds are, there are a number of sources for them. The primary source of these other funds are actually monies that originally come from the federal government, but they're called other funds because they're transferred to the department from another state agency. In this case, they're being transferred from ODE to CCWD. And what the monies I'm referring to are the Carl Perkins funds that are available for the development of professional and technical programs. And these funds are then used by the department for those purposes. The area called federal funds are funds that come from 2 primary sources, or I might call them 3 primary sources, even though I think legally they're 2. The first is the Workforce Investment Act, Title 1B.
Is this non-limited or the other?
This is the limited part. So this is the federal funds 124 and 127. And the other source is Workforce Investment Act Title II, which is the adult basic education funds that are primarily distributed then to community colleges. The Title I-B funds are also primarily distributed out to workforce providers, but though some of the monies, again, are retained by the department for administrative purposes. And the third source of federal funds are the funds that are non-limited, and though they're technically also Workforce Investment Act 1B funds, the difference is that most of the Workforce Investment Act funds are distributed to the states via a formula. These non-limited funds are distributed to the states on the basis of successful applications for them through a grant process. And these funds represent the National Emergency Grant Funds, or NEG funds. That's the acronym that you'll hear. And these are funds that are the department applies for when there's a specific mass layoff event, and the department applies for funds to help address the retraining of the employees who have been laid off as a result of these mass layoffs. They're typically due or can be related to a trade issue where the jobs are going overseas, though I don't know if that's always the requirement. But as far as the state is concerned, the department has to actually apply for these funds and get awarded these funds by the Federal Department of Labor. And because this is an application process, we have no idea really how many applications will be needed or be made in a particular biennium. We have these funds budgeted as non-limited so that essentially any of these grants that the department is successful in obtaining may be spent, because none of these grants increase the department's own costs. All of the monies are distributed out to train the workers. They don't have to hire more people at the state level. They don't have other expenses that they deal with.
Now, really what? Except Matt, Mr.
Yeah. Yes.
Mr. Chair, thank you. It's really a true pass-through. There's no community college doesn't incur any overhead as far as utilities or staff or anything, or just.
Yes, that's my understanding. Yes, these are entirely passed through. Now, one thing that I haven't done, I could have done, it's very easy to do, but I did not put on these graphs something that would be fairly obvious you might expect would be a total. And I can tell you what the totals are for both of these plans. But the reason why I didn't put a total on is because in some sense, these represent different programs. I mean, the programs that are being funded by general fund and by federal funds, they're different. And by other funds. And you can sum them up and get a number, but it doesn't make logical sense necessarily to talk about, say, the growth in the overall budget, because these are different programs, and we're looking at, it makes more sense essentially to talk about just the growth in the general fund programs, just the growth in the federal fund programs, just the growth in the other fund programs separately, instead of looking at this as a whole. Yes.
Yeah. Excuse me, Mr.
Yes.
Just a question. We're not showing anywhere in here tuition or county
page.
Or district tax dollars. Is that correct?
You are correct, Representative. These, again, are the funds that you budget for the Department of Community Colleges. And tuition funds and property taxes are not state resources. They are the community college, and you do not budget them. But the bill that you will pass and the budget that you will pass will have to indicate what all of these numbers are on these pages, of course, in more detail than we have here, but that's what your budget will do.
Okay.
That sort of is a good segue, though, to the second page here, which instead of looking at the budgets of the department, looks at the budgets of the 17 community colleges. This is if you took all 17 of them and just added them together. This is the funding that's being shown for the community colleges. And here, first to note, community colleges, as you know, are not part of state government. They are separate local government entities, and you do not approve their budgets. Instead, you provide these special payments to them, but the district boards approve these budgets. These charts here do not show expenditures. They only show revenue. So in that case, it's a little different from the first chart, from the first page. But this shows the three major sources of revenues that community colleges use to fund their operations. General fund from the state, property taxes that they collect, and tuition and fee revenues that they collect. And you can see here the estimate for 03-05. You can see here the projection for 05-07 under the Senate plan. If I can just ask you to look at on the 03-05, you see the general fund is $411 million. If you flip back to the first page and look at the left-hand pie chart, that's for 03-05. That's all the money you provided to the department. You provided $416 million. So of that $416 million, $411 million was put through to the community colleges. Roughly the remaining $5.3 million stayed with the department to fund its expenses of its personnel that work in community college, as well as debt service on bonds that were issued for community college capital construction projects a long time ago, but we're still paying the debt service on this. In this case, unlike in the earlier on the first page, it does make sense to sum these because community colleges combine these three fund sources in order to finance their education operations. So I don't want to spend take your time right now, but I have some information here in the bullet items on this page you may want to look at. It shows, at least for the Senate plan, how revenues to community colleges change from one biennium to the next. And I again want to note that these are the revenues. The expenditures can be different because community colleges do build up fund balances, and some years they spend more money than they get in terms of revenue, and some years they spend less money than they do in terms of the revenue. But these are the major funding sources for community colleges. And these numbers here, the tuition and fees and the property taxes, you will not be approving when you adopt the department's budget because those are local revenues. However, of course, you will be keeping them in mind when you try to figure out how much general fund the state needs to provide.
Mr. Bender, are we able to determine in terms of the tuition fees are projected to increase 6.7%? What amount of that is in terms of increased enrollment, and what amount of that is in terms of increased tuition and fees charges?
All of it is a result, in general, if you look at the entire system, would be a result of increases in fee, in rate amounts, because enrollments are actually projected to decline. So the rate increases have to be greater than the 6.7% to generate 6.7% more dollars, given there's a reduction in the number of students. I would like to point out that these tuition and fee numbers are really very rough estimates at this point. And even though I've got an exact number in there, 333-209-773, it looks like that's down to the dollar. I mean, this is the projection that we're getting at this point, and they do have it down to a dollar amount. But note that that is likely not to be the exact number when the biennium actually comes through, because the districts haven't been, as far as I know, none of the districts have approved the 06-07 tuition rates yet. And in terms of the 05-06 rates, many of them have approved this, but they may still make changes in some of these. That's possible.
Clarification then. So the community colleges are still projecting a continued decline in enrollment then?
Yes, at least under the governor's original budget.
And declining for two bienniums now. So, I mean, 01,
yes.
03, 03, 05, and projecting an additional decline in 05, 07.
Yes, that is correct.
Representative Wisner.
Mr. Chair, I think that's overall, but not for certain community colleges are increasing tremendously.
Right.
Well, and Mr. Chair,
yes.
We had testimony yesterday that at least one community college was turning away students because they didn't have space for them.
Well, Senator Walker, Representative Wisnett, I know a number of community colleges that are turning away nursing students because they don't have space for them.
Mr. Chair.
Yes.
A number of community colleges are turning away students because they don't have staffing to be able to provide for them, too. So,
right.
And, Mr. Chair,
yes.
Maybe this is a point for me to interject here at least for one member of your committee here, I am displeased with all of the numbers that we have seen so far as community colleges are concerned. I think you look at what the money we spend for education in the state of Oregon, and if you look at the community colleges versus the other two general sources of general pots of money, the K-12 and higher education, community colleges portions of the budgets have declined since 1999, and I'm talking about as a proportion of the state revenue. In 1999, community colleges received 4.11% of the state general fund revenue. In 2001-03, they were budgeted for 3.8% of the total general fund revenue. 2003-05, they were budgeted for 3.66%. And in the current one, they're budgeted for 3.3%. If we contrast this to some of the other areas, we would find that the proportions of reductions have not anywhere kept close to that. And this is for the one part of education in the state of Oregon that is providing us fundamentally per student served, whether we're talking about it in terms of FTE or whether we're talking about it in terms of ADMW, in many cases providing the same service as the FTE at the university or the ADMW at the K-12 level, and they're doing it for significantly less money. And so I think it's a thing we're getting the best bang for our buck, which is one of the things I would like to look at in the terms of the whole budget, is where are we getting the best investment of the state monies in. And as a consequence, long story short, I'm in some disagreement with everybody but myself on the amount of money that should be going to community college.
Well, Representative Jensen, I'm in agreement with most of your statements. The only other thing I would highlight, though, is that I don't have the exact number before me like you may have before you, but the overall amount in terms of allocation of discretionary dollars to education purposes in the governor's original budget was almost, I think, about 2.5 to 3% below what it was in the last biennium. So I think there were reductions in a number of areas in education. The only reason I brought up the concern is, I mean, all these factors are there. Rising tuitions, declining enrollments, cuts, sections, diminishing levels of curriculum so that students may not be getting the courses that they need. I would just like to, and we may not be able to see that in this budget process, but I'd just like to see some end to that decline soon. And we probably would concur with that.
Mm-hmm.
So, anything additional since I started this. Senator Whitson.
Chair Devlin, to Representative Jensen has an ally here. I agree exactly with what you're saying. I think that when we disinvest in community colleges, you're disinvesting in exactly the part of our education system that directly influences our immediate needs. That is, the workforce trained to go forth and work and produce revenue for the state. And it seems to me that that this is the most important area to invest in. I think I share Representative Jensen's belief that we get the biggest bang for the buck here. I think our community colleges are run by entrepreneurs of education to do a good job, to take a dollar and spread it further than anybody else. And I think that we should focus more, not less, of our funding on these institutions.
Well, since I started this.
You did, Mr. Chair. And, I think Representative Jensen has pointed out something very eloquent and succinct for us to look at about the disinvestment from 99 to today in community colleges. And you're right, Mr. Chair. The full education budget kind of paled in comparison to increases in other budgets. And Senator Whitsitt has a point as well. Community colleges are economic development. It is how we get people trained to do better work at higher pay. People learn trades and professional careers. I did the same. You go out and you earn more. Earning more money brings more money into the state coffers through revenues, and it also just increases the earning power. So I'm very displeased. The governor's budget had an error in it. It was fixed, but it didn't fix enough. It just got us up to some level that is paltry. So I agree that we need to continue to put a level of importance on this budget. And I think the support that we had in this building yesterday really clearly shows us that the state of Oregon appreciates their community college system. We're going, my policy committee is headed to Eugene on Friday to tour the Lane County Community College, the Workforce Development Center at Lane Community College. And we're going to see in action what that Workforce Development Center does. So I, for one, am not happy with this amount of funds, and I wanted to see some more shifting around.
Well, Senator Walker, this brief couple of statements by me that have generated a lot of other statements have probably convinced the community college representatives out here that they are better off not presenting because they are...
I can only go downhill from here.
I think it's important.
We've got to put more money in the system with jobs. That's true. Harvest some more trees. My question, Mr. Chair, is there some correlation between the drop in attendance and the rise in tuition, or is it that part of it, and then you've got...
I think Senator Nelson, I think during phase one, we received testimony to that effect. Particularly, I think there was even a report done by the community colleges, as I remember, that basically says with the rapid growth in tuition, when we first fell into sort of economic difficulties in 2001, their enrollments began to drop off significantly. And as they had to raise tuition more and more, it continued to drop off. And of course, it's kind of a downward spiral in a sense, because tuition drops off, students drop off, revenue goes down, sections are dropped, you don't have the same programs that attract students. Financial aid, of course, did not increase significantly during that period. The whole combination of the things basically has put community colleges in not the greatest of financial situations. Yeah. Well, with that, I will move it back over to Mr. Bender.
I'm sorry, Mr. Chair.
Yes.
But the devil made me do it.
And I'm glad you did it, Representative Jensen. Yeah.
Please proceed.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. Just a couple of points before I finish these pie charts we were talking about. I just wanted to bring up two things. One is capital construction. As you know, there's a big capital construction proposal in the governor's budget. This is not actually up for public hearing. The capital construction is another bill, and that's not scheduled for today. But in terms of these charts, there are only $12 in the budgets for 05-07 so far for capital construction projects. If they are actually approved, as the governor requested, there would be in this right-hand chart, pie chart on the front, there'd be about another $180 million or so in other funds, which would be a combination of state funds plus some of the local funds that the community colleges would be sending to the state as a match. So those dollars aren't in there yet. The other item I wanted to point out about was there was some talk about the changes in enrollments, and I wanted to talk about how the state budgets for enrollment changes at community colleges. Here we have a difference from how you do it for K-12. As you know, in K-12, in the calculation of the essential budget level, there is an adjustment made for changes in enrollments. That is not done for either community colleges or for higher ed. And the reason, there is a reason, it's not just arbitrary. The reason is that K-12 education is an entitlement under the state constitution. If a child is eligible, the school district cannot say, "I'm sorry, you signed up too late, we're full, we'll try again next year." Community colleges and higher ed institutions can
do that. No one's recommending
that
here on the committee.
So we've noted that in the budget process by not including any enrollment changes in at least the essential budget level calculation. Typically, community colleges and higher ed request an adjustment for increases in enrollment when their enrollments are going up, and do not request reductions in enrollments when their enrollments are declining. LFO basically doesn't recommend automatically increases in funding when enrollments are going up, and we are not now recommending a reduction in funding simply because the enrollments are going down. So this is just how we treat enrollments.
Understand.
Is there a question?
Is there a question?
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
I don't understand what you're talking about, their funding formula now, and why it is not following the K-12. That LFO is not recommending that we do anything like that. Is that what you're saying?
Yes. I'm saying that the existing process is that in developing a budget for the community college system, what we essentially do is we try to look at their costs of the services that they're providing now and make some type of projection as to what the costs will be in the upcoming biennium. But we do not make adjustments for enrollment changes. Unlike for K-12, where there is both an adjustment made for expected cost changes and an adjustment made for projected enrollment growth. And the reason for the difference is the enrollment levels at community colleges or at higher ed are fundamentally a budget and policy decision and not simply based on the number of people out there. When you put together your budget and provide funding, you essentially indirectly help determine what enrollment levels are by providing funds that are available for the colleges to either expand enrollments or not. But it is not an automatic thing. That's a policy decision. So we don't come and say to you, oh, you need to put in another $30 million because enrollments are going to go up by X percent. Because we believe that the decision of whether enrollments will go up X percent or not is your decision to make, and it shouldn't be given to you as a fait accompli, as it is in this case for K-12 education, the number of enrollment in K-12.
The formula issues over community colleges are not as complex as K-12, but different in the sense that in K-12, with the exception of local options, all local revenue goes into the formula, and community colleges it does not. I believe currently half goes into the formula of local revenue. We are in the process of trying to get the 17 community colleges to approve a formula or to agree to a formula for the distribution of the revenue. There are some significant policy issues there, but it's a difficult issue to deal with because, I mean, I think some people have indicated there's some enrollment increases at some community colleges. The ones that I have seen, I think I saw out of 17, three with enrollment increases. I think it was three. We can move on.
Sure.
If that's okay.
Finally, I just distributed one other chart to you that shows the general fund support levels historically in the blue, and in the red shows four alternative proposals for the upcoming biennium, the first being the governor's original proposal of $393.6 million. Today you'll be hearing that the governor has increased his recommendation to $416.6 million. The Senate co-chair's proposal is $421.5 million, and the House co-chair's proposal is $425.5 million. I'd be happy to discuss how those numbers have come about if you have questions. Otherwise, because of time, you may want to move on. It's up to you, Mr. Chair.
Any questions?
Senator Walker. Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. I have a question about, we all know the governor made an error in his original budget. So how big was the error? And it was added back. And was there any more added back? Or is that the difference between 416 and 393 the error?
Okay, that might be a good question both for Mr. Bender and Mr. McGee, actually. Mr. McGee?
Yeah. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Bill never gets just big.
Yeah. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Bill McGee, Department of Administrative Services. The governor added back $23 million, which would bring the support fund to just over the amount that was appropriated in the 03-05 biennium, and that was the purpose of that restoration.
Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Okay. At this point, are you concluded? Okay.
Mr. Chair, there was some rumor, about a $6 million difference or something. Has that been resolved?
Is that a difference between, well, it's not actually six, between the Senate and House co-chairs, but there's... there are always rumors in this building about.
I heard that the $6 million really wasn't actually going to community college, it was going to workforce development.
Well, Senator Nelson, that is a sort of a different debate.
In that
we have sort of always looked at the community college workforce development number as a single number in the sense of how it's been viewed in the building. There are some advocates now wanting us to split the number. I actually don't think the co-chairs are advocates of that position.
Just checking.
Sure. Yes.
I think it should be pointed out, too, that this difference between the governor's recommended budget and the House version is really amounts to 0.6% of the K-12 budget recommended.
Yeah.
And that the difference between the governor's revised recommended budget and the House version is like 0.2%. I mean, I guess my point is that a crumb to one organization is a whole loaf of bread to these people.
Yeah. Well, if you take enough crumbs away from a loaf of bread, you don't have much of a loaf left, too. So, anyway, we will proceed. Mr. McGee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Bill McGee again from DAS, and I believe you have my handout to go over the governor's recommended budget for Department of Community College and Development. page two is just the slide that you've seen before, and I think we'll see in all the budget. It shows the distribution of the different education agencies. First, within all funds budget, where the Community College and Workforce Development Department was 5%, and then the General Fund and Lottery Fund budget, where it would be 6%. Page three, the governor's principal budget. This agency is entirely included in the education principal. Not surprising. Moving on to page four and some of the budget information specifically. And some of this you've heard from Mr. Bender. I'll go over it fairly quickly. In terms of the total budget for the agency, Mr. Bender indicated the general fund is about 72% of that. And again, we're working at this point off the governor's recommended budget. The other funds amount of $13.5 million is 2.5%. That consists of the Carl Perkins funds transferred to the Department of Education, Mr. Bender indicated. There are also GED fees that the department collects. There's amusement device tax revenues that the Oregon Youth Conservation Corps receives, and grants from the Marine Board and Parks, which also support OYCC activities. The federal funds, the limited portion, again, 23% of the governor's budget. Again, Mr. Bender described these are Workforce Investment Act funds, whether from Title I-B or Title II. And the federal funds non-limited budget, that is the $12 million from the National Emergency Grants, which will be received as they're received during the biennium based on dislocations of various businesses. Moving on to page... Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yes, Representative Whitman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. McGee, the back to page two, our all fund budget and our general fund budget. Now, what are we looking at? This is the governor's recommended budget. So what are you using for the state fund and Department of Education? Is this a 2.25?
Department of Education, this would be the original $5 billion for the Department of Education. Is that what you're asking?
Yes. So you have not.
This is the governor's original budget at this point.
Thank you.
Moving on to page five, the distribution of the governor's recommended budget among the various components of the agency that you'll be approving as you go through the budget. Most of the funds here are in the support fund, the general fund amount that are transferred to the colleges is 71.1%. Debt service, Mr. Bender indicated on the bonds that were sold in the 70s for capital projects is now 0.4%, barely over $2 million. The different federal and other programs, the workforce programs of different kinds, about 26% of the total agency budget. Youth Conservation Corps at $2 million is 0.4%. The office operations, which are really the staff that administer the different funds, about 2.3% of the total budget for the agency. And capital construction, the $12 expenditure limitation that are currently in the governor's budget, recommends to virtually 0% of the budget. In terms of the categories that the funds are expended on page six, not surprisingly, 98% of this budget it consists of special payments. It's the money under the support fund that go to the colleges for their operations. It's the workforce funds that go to the local workforce agencies and the community colleges to support those programs. Debt service, again, is 0.4% of the budget. Personal services support the staff of the agency, 1.3%. Services supplies to assist in the operation of the agency, 0.8%. And the capital outlay, which is, again, the expenditure limitation for the construction projects, is again, $12. The graph on page 7, you've seen before, this is very similar to what Mr. Bender gave you in his last chart. It shows you in dollar terms what the budget for the agency has been beginning in 1999-2001 at a historical high point for the agency in terms of the support fund. The reduction of the actual expenditures in 2001-03, including both the reductions in the special sessions and the shift of $56 million, the last payment essentially from that biennium to the following biennium, which continues as we move forward. And then the governor's original budget of $39.6 million, and then the revised budget of $416.6 million. And as Mr. Bennett indicated, that's about a 0.1% increase from 2003-05. So it basically continues the same level of funding in the general fund side. In terms of just the policy issues, as you've noted, the governor's recommended budget did include an error that reduced the support fund by 5.5% from the 2003-05 approved levels. The governor is recommending an adjustment of $23 million, which would restore the general fund support to the 2003-05 levels. With this restoration, and including the total public resources, that is the general fund and the projected property tax and the small amount of projected timber tax revenue, those public resources would be increased by 3.2% from the 2003-05 levels. Again, this does not include tuition, as it's generally not counted as a public resource. It's a student resource.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
I need Mr. McGee to go over that again. That doesn't make sense to me.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Senator Walker, when you combine the state general fund at the governor's revised level, the $416 million, plus the $220 million in projected property tax revenues in the 0507 level, and the very small amount, it's less than $1 million in projected timber tax revenues that flows through the department, those three sources of funding in the 0507 biennium under the governor's revised proposal is 3.2% over what those same revenue sources would be in the 0305 level. So we're trying to give you there a comparison of really what the total public resources that support the colleges.
So let me make sure I understand, Mr. Chair. So the mistake was corrected and brought it to the 0305 level.
In state general fund support only.
In state general fund. And then in the extra monies, the property tax, the timber tax, those things, that will bring it up to an increase of 3.2% over the last.
That's correct, Senator Walker.
Okay. Now I understand. Thank you.
Thank you,
Mr. Chair.
Yes, Senator Nelson.
Since I'm a great advocate of the timber tax, we're dedicated to public education. Do you have any figures, or can you give me some figures of, say, from 1991 to what you received?
We'd have to go back and dig that up. It's a very small number at this point, given the changes. It generally doesn't flow through the state anymore. Most of it flows whatever.
I was just saying, back in 99, was there any difference? Or 91, actually. Actually, I'm looking back to 91, because I have this theory that the decline in general fund revenues and support for public services coincides with the decline in the timber tax harvest. So I'd be interested in seeing there's a correlation even in this
one. Senator Nelson, if you would like, do you want to expand your question, since this is the Education Committee, to all timber receipts in terms of their what the difference has been since 91, because, of course, there would be a considerable amount in terms of going to K through 12 in that period of time. So,
yeah, I would be very interested
in that. Okay. Mr. Chair, Senator Nelson, we will get that to you. We probably take a little bit of time to dig back that far, and there have been some statutory changes we'll have to look at as well. So,
thank you.
Continuing on with page 9, this is the policy issues in the governor's budget. Again, as you know, binding authority is recommended for capital projects at six colleges. The expenditure limitation here, as you know, as Mr. Bender has indicated, is $12. It's a dollar. For each campus, there's a dollar for the Article 11G bond authority and a dollar for the other revenues the campus will be providing. The governor has included $91.2 million in the bond bill for the state for the authority for Article 11G bonds. The dollar expenditure limitation is this budget, an indication that we still have some work to do, we believe, on determining what the appropriate expenditure limitation for each college's project is, and we're working on that. We're working with your staff on that. So at some point, either during session or as part of the emergency board process, there'll be a recommendation to increase the expenditure limitation for the projects.
One item on that, members of the committee. Given the short period of time that we have in phase two, we will be largely talking about operations for community colleges and workforce development, not actually the construction. So I'm going to try to see if I can, after we get through this hearings process, if we can add a meeting a couple of weeks out probably, and probably would have to be an early evening meeting to go over some of the construction-related issues, because we don't really have that built into our schedule right now. Otherwise, we would get all the way till the end of phase three when we're supposed to be making decisions and not have had a great deal of time to discuss it. So, but I'll wait a week or so beyond when we have all these hearings out in the field.
That would be great, Mr. Chair. If you just give us a little advance notice to plan for our calendar.
Okay,
that would be appreciated.
Continuing, Mr. Chair, in the second bullet on page 9, funding, as you know, is recommended for the pre-K to 16 data system to allow transfer of student records between high schools, community colleges, and universities. Funds are included in this budget as well as the Department of Education and the Department of Higher Education's budget for this purpose. And finally, there are 5 positions that are funded entirely with federal and other funds that would be established to support various workforce programs as well. There's no general fund involved in those positions. And finally, on page 10, we have no fee or revenue issues or technical adjustments to bring forward at this time for this budget. So that would conclude my presentation.
Thank you. Any additional questions for Mr. McGee? Yes, Senator Whitson.
Going back to page 7, where does the property tax revenue show up on that page?
Good question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator Whitsitt, they would not be, those funds are not received by the state. They're received by the college districts and expended at that level. Mr. Bender's presentation gave you a pie chart, an indication of what that would be. We are projecting that amount to be $220 million in the 05-07 biennium, which would be an increase from about $200.1 million in the $9 million in the current biennium.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. I think we are ready for Madam Commissioner.
Good morning, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. For the record, I am Kim Foyce Brawley. I am the director of the Department of Community Colleges and Workforce Development. Thank you so much for having us here, and certainly appreciate your positive intent around the Community College Support Fund budget. You were sort of reading our mind, Chair Devlin. We were really thinking that maybe our work was superfluous, given your comments. I do want to thank you for the opportunity to come back and to share more information on impact regarding community colleges and workforce development in Oregon. In meeting with Mr. Bender earlier this month, we did discuss that we will be concentrating on the general fund and the community college support fund and impacts on colleges and students, and probably touch lightly on the federal programs and workforce development. But please, if you have questions, don't hesitate. If you have additional questions about any of those things, if we may have lightened up more than you would have chosen. So, over the next few days, we're going to talk about major changes to the department's budget, the impact of these changes on local community colleges, their students, and their communities. We'll also tomorrow proceed with a discussion in some depth about the budget detail. You heard yesterday some powerful testimony on the impact of the decrease in sections and services and the increase of more than 25% in tuition over the last several years. These are real and tangible consequences of reduced state resources for community colleges. I just want to remind you, I think you heard this yesterday, that Oregon's community colleges are the largest provider of post-secondary education in the state. We are serving approximately 330,000 students a year. That is a reduction of some 70-plus thousand since 2001. And we do provide a broad array of academic, workforce, entrepreneurial, and adult basic ed services. We have come to you today with another graphic that we believe will help explain how all of these are tied together, the major changes to the department, how budget reductions have both affected improved service delivery and a decrease in the service that is delivered. The increases and decreases of the budget are linked to service delivery and to our performance. I am encouraged by both the governor and the legislative leadership in suggesting increases to the Community College Support Fund. The good news is that the need in community colleges is clearly on your priority list. It's also true that Oregon's community colleges have lost capacity, and we are hoping that through this presentation that's clear to you and might help with your deliberations. The major changes we're going to cover this morning are agency changes, program changes.
Yes, so Representative Jensen.
Perhaps you don't have a number, but you said we have lost capacity.
Mm-hmm.
And if I heard testimony yesterday correct, the amounts of money proposed would not have in any way increased capacity. They would have merely been adequate to perpetuate the mediocrity that has been forced upon us.
Chair Devlin, Representative Jensen. Well, I cringe a little at the at mediocrity. The balance of your statement, I heartily agree with. The restoration of funds to the Community College Support Fund and to operations at the department would nearly sustain the level of activity that we have today. It would not increase it.
Okay, so if we wanted to increase by 0.1% some of what we've lost, what would we have to do? I mean, I don't want to get all the way back to where we were, but what would we have to do? I'm sorry, Mr. Chair.
Chair Devlin, Representative Jensen, are you asking for an action that includes resources? Am I to make a guess?
That's kind of what we're dealing with here is resources, yes.
Chair Devlin, Representative Jensen, I have to admit to having thought about it, but I am reluctant to give you a hard and fast number. May I bring that back?
The representative will withdraw the question.
Okay.
I appreciate the position here.
Thank you.
So.
Please proceed.
Thank you. So we're going to talk about major changes this morning. Agency changes, we've provided a handful of slides here that give you a historical perspective. The Office of Community College Services has existed for a couple of decades. It did at one time exist as a division of the Department of Education. And in 1987, the legislature did create a position of commissioner and did require that there be a separate community college budget that was developed by the legislature. Other changes in 1997, about a decade later, federal job training programs and resources were moved to what was then the Office of Community College Services. That action nearly doubled, or more than doubled, the size of the agency, and it has significantly increased our accounting and reporting responsibilities. In 1999, the legislature again took action, and this time changed the agency name to the Department of, and we have other statutory requirements around working with the Governor's Office of Education and Workforce Policy. For just a snapshot of biennial general fund appropriation at the bottom of this slide, when most of this conversation started in the late 80s, the general fund budget was $142 million. in 2001. I dare say the slide shows you 03, and that is, as Chair Devlin has indicated, a misnomer. We were at $467 million in general fund, and currently in the governor's recommended budget at $394 million. Program changes federally. The Job Training Partnership Act was replaced by the Workforce Investment Act in the year 2000. It changed the focus of that program to one of a demand strategy, where economic programs are seeking a social benefit rather than a social program that's seeking an economic benefit. We have discussed in phase one that most of the federal programs that we administer are currently being reviewed and very likely will be reauthorized in the coming Congress. They are all due. They may receive a continuing resolution if they are not reauthorized. We expect there was much conversation about Carl Perkins when the administration first put out their budget in February. The Carl Perkins program was slated to be eliminated. I'm happy to say that I was going to say cooler minds prevailed, but I'll stick with that. Congress, both in the House and the Senate, have restored funding for the Perkins program for 2006. The buzz in D.C. is that the conversation is not over, but it is funded for the fiscal year 06. Or I wouldn't say it's not finished yet, but they both have proposals forward to continue the funding. At the state level, program changes. Probably the major program change has been the institution of the Employer Workforce Training Fund, which was brought about by the governor's executive order last year. It provides use of federal funds for incumbent worker training, and the community colleges now receive approximately 50% of the training contracts for or by employers in their local communities to provide that training for incumbent workers. The other state program changes is a real push by the State Board of Education and the State Board of Higher Education to look at education as a enterprise, not as three independent segments, but as a linked and synergistic operation. You have had conversation here about expanded options, which accelerate student movement between and among the high school to community college and the community college to university system. We have added a slide here on number 7, which talks about a participation gap. The reason, or at least one of the compelling reasons for the work at the state level with the policy boards, the State Board of Higher Ed and the State Board of Education, it's important because Oregon is falling behind in serving students and having them move from high school to post-secondary education. I'm not going to review for you all the information that I provided in phase one about why a post-secondary education is so important to our economy, but suffice it to say, we must ramp up the number of students that move through our system if we are to have that robust economy. And this will be difficult to accomplish with fewer sections and higher tuition. This slide number 8 actually provides a look at where Oregon ranks among the 50 states. We are at 30.8%. The benchmark state, which is Rhode Island, is much higher at 47% of those students who transition from high school to post-secondary education. That's both public and private. The highlight here is that we need to ensure that the students make that transition, and we need to have capacity to serve them. Budget reductions in the general fund. This has been a topic of much conversation. Yes, sir?
Can we clarify that first statement here that $467 million? I know we've commented on this before for the 0103 biennium. That was the close of session.
Yes.
And it only lasted till the first special session.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Yes, Chair Devlin, I think we need to begin showing the 467 as a 2001 number, and because it didn't last much longer than 2001. I do want to note that there is an error on your slide. I believe you have a number of 394 for the governor's recommended budget, and 0507, is that the number that you have there?
Yeah.
And it should be 411 for 0305. It is currently 394 for 0507. So we have the wrong dates, the right number.
I beg your pardon. Could you run by that again for me?
The very first bullet has community colleges decreased from a high of $476 million in 0103 to $411 million in 0305. Yours says to 394. Right. It should read $411 million in 0305 as the slide that's being projected portrays.
If I just may add, that's only the funds that go to the colleges. That's not the total general fund.
That's correct. Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, that's the $5 million administrative cost. That's what you explained earlier.
Correct, and debt service.
How much is administrative? How much is debt?
Not even.
The debt service is going down because the bonds are so old, and it's now less than $3 million a year, a biennium, whereas the administration amounts are about $3 million per biennium.
And to comment, if the legislature approves the construction projects, the debt service will go up. Senator Whitson.
Chair Dillon, I have a couple quick questions on page 9. What is the change in full-time students, FTEs? You said the headcount is down by 75,000. What is FTE?
Chair Devlin, Representative Whitson. We have dropped from 96,000 full-time equivalents to 88,800 in the last year. We have information. Last full year, we have information for.
You're about 7,200 students. Yeah. And then also on that same page, how many courses lost were in life skills type instruction as opposed to core instruction?
Chair Devlin, Senator Whitsitt, excellent question. I don't have that fine cut available today. I would like to bring that back. I can tell you that we have lost about 7,000. We have a slide later that actually covers this in more detail, but not to that fine a cut. We'd like to bring that back.
Thank you.
I'm going to continue on the impact of budget reductions. There has been much discussion about tuition increases across the state in community colleges. The financial burden and percent of students on average is increasing, and our the one bright light is that we have increased our distance learning offerings, but we have unfortunately decreased on-site offerings. Quickly to the federal funds, they have also decreased about 6% in the last 4 or 5 years. That includes both the workforce funds and the adult basic education funds. And then again, the bottom bullet, Carl Perkins funding, a potential decrease and a targeted new use by the administration. We do believe that has been forestalled. Moving now to the impact of those budget reductions, we have seen we have been able to maintain and actually only slightly increase services with our workforce funds, primarily through efficiency and improved service delivery. Community college students have seen a decrease in services due to the decline in funding. a little more detail on the impact of the workforce customers. The co-location of many of the workforce programs in one-stop service centers under the brand of WorkSource Oregon has provided easier access for job seekers and workers and businesses. Employment is still the primary goal for job training programs, even though they still run under the rubric of job training. Youth programs at the federal level have moved from concentrating on summer employment to year-round education attainment and credentials. And again, other impacts on workforce customers is the last bullet, the Employer Workforce Training Fund, which focuses on incumbent workers.
Yes, Senator Woodson.
Would you discuss the potential for privatization of this job source function, as to certainly on the most superficial level, and discuss how that moving that one stop service to an employment department would affect CCWD?
Chair Devlin, Senator Whitsitt, you asked provocative questions this morning. I believe that at least at the national level, there has been a concerted effort, and it is duplicated here in the state, that we move our employment and training programs, including labor exchange, which is the work that moves people into jobs most efficiently, is moving the primary policy focus from concentrating on the needs of the worker to concentrating on the needs of local businesses and ensuring that as workers come in, they have the skills that they need to be ready to be hired. There has been a debate, and I'm sure will continue to be a debate, about whether there should be a nationally funded or federally funded employment service, as there are competitors in this state and nationally that are private for-profit enterprises. These services are delivered at no cost to individuals, and I think that your questions are probably best put to Director of the Employment Department, Deborah Lincoln, because I, perhaps thankfully or not, get to concentrate on the education and training side of employment and training and not necessarily the labor exchange as much as she does.
Thank you. I have an appointment with Ms. Lincoln. I wanted to hear you weigh in on this, so thank you.
Thank you. Please proceed.
I'm on slide 12, and I think I probably should pick up my pace. So slow me down when you have questions. I don't want to move so quickly. We just finished talking about the impact of the federal workforce programs and budget reductions, and now we'll move to the impact on community college students.
We're moving to this slide. And I just had a quick question for the commissioner who's cringed at my choice of words a little earlier. What you're giving us there on eroding access, isn't that on a slippery slope to mediocrity?
Chair Devlin,
I'm not going to suggest in this stage that's where community colleges are at. I want to suggest the danger.
Thank you for that rhetorical comment. I couldn't agree more. I think we can move on. You are well aware of, and we will share with you some specifics on eroding access and eroding affordability. Senator Whitsitt, this gets to your earlier question about declining course sections. We did share this slide with you in phase one, thought it was important to bring it back. The decreased sections are a direct impact from declining resources available to community colleges to build and renovate or refresh their programs. Community colleges have been able to maintain access by increasing tuition. But even with tuition increases, the colleges do not have enough funding to keep up with the demand by students for course offerings. And you heard yesterday and in previous testimony that many times students will step up and say, we're willing to pay a little more in order to maintain the programs that are important to us. The point this slide makes is that between 2001-02 and 03-04, 12.5% fewer course sections were offered at the community colleges. Of that, that's about 11,000 courses. 4,700 of them were in core curriculum, both lower division, professional, technical, and other core areas. 6,300 other were adult education and adult continuing education courses. And grouped in that are the self-improvement courses that the legislature chose as non-reimbursable in 2002.
Senator Woodson.
A question in the K-12 presentations, we've seen that the rapidly increasing employee compensation is causing K-12 to equally rapidly reduce the number of employees and or reduce the number of days in school. And the question is, how are employee compensation changes the escalating costs of insurance and retirement? How are those affecting the community college?
Chair Devlin, Senator Whitsitt, we have a slide later today that begins to look at increased costs of benefits. I don't have at hand compensation and the combination of those two as a factor in of increased fixed cost and therefore decreased availability for course sections. I'd like to bring that information back.
Thank you.
Wouldn't it be a fair statement to say, though, that part of what has happened is that community colleges have always been, at least in the last decade or more, very dependent upon a large proportion of their faculty being part-time. And as community colleges have to make choices, I think they're moving to fewer and fewer full-time faculty. Would that be a fair statement? Or that may be as bad as the question from Representative Jensen.
I'm not sure you want to get into this, Chairman, but I'll be happy to chime in when
Chair Devlin, I don't have hard and fast data to respond to the ratio of full-time, part-time. Each community college is different. They all do have different labor agreements. Some of them are more specific about full-time and part-time and adjunct faculty. Would you want more detailed information to come back or...
Well, actually, I sent you a memo that you haven't received yet that will actually ask for more detail. So,
well done.
Not entirely just on that subject, but on a few others, too.
Okay. So.
Until we have that information, Mr. Chair, I won't delay the conversation this morning anymore on this, but...
It may not be clear in that memo from the questions asked if this question was specifically being asked, so add this question in that memo, and that is that what has been the rate in terms of, like, say, over the last two bienniums of full-time faculty to part-time faculty, adjunct faculty, and if there's been a shift. Maybe to make that the last three bienniums, so...
Sir.
Yes, Representative March.
I hope as part of that you asked some information about unemployment insurance and because some, you know, a lot of adjuncts don't don't know whether they're going to be able to come back in the fall, and they're not eligible currently for unemployment insurance. So, and yet I don't know if their wages are actually taxed for unemployment insurance or not. So,
okay, we'll consider that an additional question.
Thank you, Representative March.
Always had to have a hard one.
Yeah. Okay. Please proceed.
I'm on page 14. This is declining enrollment. We just had a conversation about declining course sections. Not surprisingly, we also have a decline in enrollment. We have covered this subject. Both full-time, half-time, and part-time enrollments have decreased about 75,000 students have been lost in headcount, and for the earlier math, about 7,200 in headcount or in full-time equivalents.
Yes, sir, what was that again? What is full-time?
Chair Devlin, Senator Nelson, we calculate full-time equivalents on 510 clock hours per student. That's about 45 credits per year.
And how many of the balance, how many FTEs do you have then or now?
Chair Devlin, Senator Nelson, we have about 88,800.
Mr. Chair?
Yes, Representative Jensen.
510 clock hours? Is that the number I heard you say?
Chair Devlin, Representative Jensen, yes.
Has that reduced in recent years?
Chair Devlin, Representative Jensen, not in my history with the department, no.
It's been a while since but it seemed to me it was somewhat over that when I was involved. But trivia point, forget it.
One thing for the record, too, in terms of the questions you've been asked here today and the memo that you haven't received yet that was probably just sent out yesterday afternoon, I'm not anticipating that those answers will be here tomorrow. No. Maybe the end of next week, but I'm not asking anybody to work nights to figure out the answers by tomorrow morning.
Chair Devlin, I certainly appreciate that consideration. You could see that I was already crafting email messages to community college presidents in my mind. Yes, I hope you are all taking notes. We'll compare notes after. We have a map here on the impact on students. This map shows you by community college district the decline in level of services dropped from 13%, which we would call a market penetration, to 11% of the population served over the last biennium. Moving on to the eroding affordability, we have also had this conversation before. This chart shows you the same tuition across the Oregon 17 community colleges for tuition and fees. In 2002, the average was about $2,000 for that academic year, about $2,000 a year. It is now average about $2,800 for a full-time student.
Chair?
Yeah.
I have the range of the tuition.
Chair Devlin, Representative Wisnett, yes, we will be bringing that back to you.
Thank you.
Slide 17, Oregon does have the highest tuition in the 15 Western states and its community colleges. We were number two a couple of years ago. Oregon's funding and its state resources that assist students in financial aid has remained the same or declined over the same period of time. So you can see that why we continue to believe that that their education enterprise does need to link these education budgets, including that of the Oregon Student Assistance Commission. slide 18 is a picture of the funding for 2001 as compared to 03-05, and you will see the increased share of tuition there highlighted from 27% to 32%. All of this is important information because of the impact it has on students and the ability of students to then increase their well-being and their opportunity in the state. Community college access is critical for Oregon. It is the well-being of individuals, businesses, communities that work together to create a positive economic cycle. And the well-being to assist the state, the community, the employer, and the individual and the family to succeed. That's why we make this investment in education. I'm going to move now to improved program delivery. In the midst of all of the reductions, the decrease in an eroding of affordability and accessibility, there have been some bright lights, and I want to talk about a few of those. First of all is distance education. We did share this information with you in our performance measure. Our baseline for 98-99 had about 28,000 students taking courses. That number is up around 66,000 now. We are generating almost twice as many full-time equivalent students through distance learning. We have more classes being offered. And we have not lost a host provider college yet. The list there of 13 community colleges participating, those are colleges that host programs, but all 17 colleges offer distance learning. They may not just be the host of a course offered for their students.
Mr. Chair.
Yes, Representative Wisnett.
Thank you. Commissioner, you said we have not lost a community college yet. Is there anything in that comment that, I mean, is there a baseline that we look at for a community college of whether it's serving the needs of the community? And have we ever closed a community college, or we only open community college?
Chair Nelson, Representative Wisnett, we have not closed a community college. My comment was in the context of distance learning. We have not, because of the advancing of technology and the cost of that technology, it is always an open question whether a college will be able to afford to operate distance learning courses. But we have been able to maintain through a we have what I will call a set aside in the community college support fund that supports directly the delivery of online courses. So it's not left entirely up to the colleges to find it in their general operating funds.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
Representative Kessler.
Commissioner, one of the factors with this distance education is that you can take courses from places like Dallas Community College via the internet sort of thing too. Mm-hmm. And they have put an inordinate amount of energy, as I a number of years ago my observation, nothing current, into developing this technology to the point of, as we first looked at it, making it looked like it was hard to compete with. We've gone ahead and we've moved ahead. But as our tuition goes up on this, are we going to reach some, are we reaching some point, have we reached a point where we're going to cease to be the state providing our students this education, and we're going to outsource that to any of Miami-Dade or Dallas or whoever it happens to be, mm-hmm. Since they're as close to somebody in Fossil as Chemeketa or Blue Mountain or TVCC or whoever might be.
Senator Nelson, Representative Jensen, what you have just suggested is an anathema. I can't imagine that we would foreclose the opportunity for Oregonians by relying on another state to provide our public community college education. I think our effort needs to be, this would be my opportunity for a rhetorical comment, would be for us to continue to invest in not just distance education, but all post-secondary education so that we maintain an affordable public education system for Oregonians.
And, Mr. Chair,
yes.
I certainly appreciate your answer, and I would certainly concur with that. And I wasn't necessarily talking about the state making some sort of a conscious choice to do this, but the pocketbook of the students making the choice to do that. And I, therefore, am obviously talking about the tuition.
Yes.
That we charged, that you went through a slide or two ago, is reaching the levels that it is reaching now, and whether that may in fact be jeopardizing or on the verge of jeopardizing the distance education that we are trying to provide.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm going to move to slide 22, another place where we have improved program delivery is in articulation agreements between community colleges and universities. We shared with you in some detail those articulation agreements and for what subjects and with what universities. This is a summation of those. Moving on to the next slide, this is the shows you graphically the increase in co-enrollment between community colleges and the university system, where in the fall of 2001, the enrollment was just over 1,100 students, and it's now nearly it's over 3,800 students. I want to thank the university system for building such a wonderful slide and that we are able to use it. We will want to make sure that you all understand that it is at the local community college and university level that these agreements are struck. And the emphasis here is on seamlessness for the student so that the student can, and I'm sure you will well remember the example of Lynn Benton Community College and Oregon State University, where they really pioneered this work and continue to have a robust co-enrollment program for their students.
Mr. Nielsen?
Yes.
Ms. Prisbelli, the two schools that are seemingly missing are Western Oregon, which is zero, and University of Oregon, which is 65, as opposed to Oregon State's 2,200 and something. Could you discuss that, please? What is the reason why those organizations, why those universities are not participating?
Chair Nelson, Senator Wisnant, I don't have detailed information about the reasons for not having agreement. I do know that both Western and the University of Oregon are and have been in conversation with their local community colleges about building articulation agreements for students. I could bring you back more specific information. I do know that the work is ongoing to increase the co-enrollment programs.
Do you know how long those conversations have been going on?
Chair Devlin, Senator Wisnant, for some time.
Thank you.
The next three slides, 24, 25, and 26, do give you some detail about those same time frames by each university and where they have co-enrollment programs with community colleges. On slide 27, there's a discussion about dual credit, and this would be between community colleges and high schools. So this would be the other end of the bridge, if you will. Again, the baseline year here is 99-2000. There has been an increase in both the number of students and the number of credits. clearly the efficient use of offerings of college credit both at the high school and availability for high school students to take courses at the community college has well served Oregon's high school students in the past several years. Switching gears now to a question of the use of how the agency uses professional services, you are, or you will soon be, well apprised of the lean administrative structure at the Department of Community Colleges and Workforce Development. So we use professional services to great advantage. The examples that are listed here, the Western Center at Oregon State University does a lot of professional development and training in the area of adult basic education and literacy for the 17 community colleges, and they are funded by the department so that we don't build that capacity ourselves. Rather, we outsource it. Another good example is that we often use experts in the field for research projects. Particularly of note lately has been the specialization of industry cluster research so that we know where the jobs of the future are going to be, what the needs and skill levels of those jobs are going to be, and then ensuring that the colleges and workforce partners have that information so there aren't false starts to serve employers in a community. Areas of concern, we have covered this, but more specifically, particularly for community colleges, we are concerned about the declining capacity. Professional technical programs seem to be the most at risk, and we believe that is because of the higher than average cost to create and maintain them. Programs such as nursing, electronics, drafting, fire science all require specialized laboratories and equipment and are in constant need of updating to stay current in the field so that the credential that the student leaves with has value in the marketplace. We are also concerned about developmental education, adult basic skills, and ESL. We have a growing need and a similar lack of availability and capacity. Our lower division transfer courses are at or very near capacity. We have seen a slight increase, 1 or 2% increase statewide in the number of students that are enrolling in lower division transfer, and we believe that's primarily that even though because community college tuition has gone up, so has four-year public and private tuition in the state, and it is a good value to begin your baccalaureate experience there at a community college.
Senator Whitson.
Ms. Crispetti, on the lower division transfer courses, are you making any headway in getting distance learning into that process where it seems to me that would be a great way to reduce costs and personnel?
Senator, Chair Devlin, Senator Wisnett, absolutely. We actually, Oregon is able to offer via distance learning our Oregon Associate of Arts transfer degree. Thank you. I just went blank. I actually had in my hand the 2005 distance learning catalog yesterday and said, darn, we should have brought this catalog for the committee. So perhaps we'll bring that back tomorrow so you can see the courses that are offered online around the state.
Thank you.
A clarification on that. In terms of that associate's program, and the distance learning portion is accepted by our public institutions of higher education in terms of being equivalent to in-classroom?
Yes, Senator Devlin, it okay. Absolutely is. Other impacts, this is a slide that we brought forward from phase one, talking about customer satisfaction. Providing value for Oregonians. I don't Perhaps I don't need to, but I would like to remind you that Oregon's community colleges continue to be rated among the highest of adding value in providing approval when the Oregon Population Survey is done. It's a highlight of service that has been provided through the department and the local service delivery area. I do have to perhaps wax philosophical for a moment as we think about what we could do if we had the resources. How many more students from community college could transfer to the university system if we but had the capacity? What would it take to expand the capacity of adult basic ed and ESL classes at community colleges? What if our energy, passion, and commitment were not curtailed by the size of our purse? I believe that this committee fully understands the role of community colleges and that the dollars suggested to fund the Community College Support Fund by the governor of the House and the Senate have been increased and are truly needed. So let's talk about major budget drivers. The March forecast did show that personal income and employment were up slightly from that was compared to the 2004 and the last forecast. And with that came an increased dollar amount for the general fund. However, we continue to have a relatively high unemployment rate, and that indicates that more Oregonians have need for the services that are funded through community colleges and workforce development programs. Oregon versus the nation when you look at unemployment rate, the nation is at 5.5%. And Oregon, we have fluctuated in the last year, just in the last year, from 8.7 to 6.8. So we are yet a full percentage point ahead of the nation. Oregon has lost almost 45,000 non-farm jobs since 2002. That's a decline of 2.8%. Our population grew by over 100,000 citizens during that same period. So we have more need, both by in-migration and increased population, but we have decreased capacity. We have actually had an increase in the number of people who have sought services in the workforce investment area by almost 3% in that same time frame. While the economy in Oregon begins to recover, and that forecast certainly helps, the cost of delivery has not declined. Slide 33 shows you the increased cost of PERS and health care within the community colleges. And although increases have been contained, it is added to these other fixed costs that are increasing. It does sound like I'm going to be bringing back more detailed information on that.
Yes, Senator Whitson.
If my figures are right, your health care costs are going up about 3.5% a year.
Oh, that would be remarkable.
The question is, how are you able to do that when K-12 is going up double digit every year?
Staff, more adjuncts.
I might ask a question, if it's okay, Senator Whitson. Actually, K-12 multiplier is 12% per year.
Mm-hmm.
I think we will be using a higher multiplier than that, to be honest, in the end. We don't know yet, but I know there's one built into the governor's budget for state employees higher than the 12%. So that, and that's to a large extent because public school employees share in the cost of their health care, at least to a large extent. In most cases, it's capped. Mm-hmm. Or it's a percentage. Are you actually 3.5%?
Chair Devlin, no, I do not believe so. No, it's considerably more than that.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
I think if you delve into the details, you might find fewer full-time faculty and more adjuncts who don't get benefits like health insurance, which will mask the actual increase in the health insurance contracts.
Thank you, Representative March. Madam Commissioner, this is my faculty side of my with all deference to Representative Wisnet. Please proceed. Were you done, Senator?
I would just comment that's approximately a 400% difference. I think it should be dealt with too.
Okay. If you could bring us back what multiplier they are using, just for clarification, though, this might be a good thing to get on the record. How do community colleges obtain health care for their employees in terms of coverage? Is it through a central, or is it community college by community college?
Senator Devlin, excellent question. It is, as in most things with the 17 colleges, varied. There are colleges that are part of a pool, an insurance pool, and some that are not. And we can certainly bring you back information about that.
Mr. Chair,
yeah.
Question on that. Are some of them still pooled with K-12, with OSBA?
Yes, Representative Jensen.
Okay. Please proceed.
Thank you. On slide 34, federal resources. We have already talked about this in some detail, that the federal program funding has been fairly stable. It is there's been a slight decrease, slight increase 1 year, and a slight decrease the next. I can certainly go into detail here, but given the time, I think I'll move along. On slide 35, the demand for service, how many Oregonians could community colleges be serving, and some discussion about what we see coming down the pike or what is in the pipeline, both with high school students graduating and with adults returning for more education. We had an earlier conversation, I think it was Representative Jensen, who has now left, who asked the question about the correlation between increasing tuition and decreasing enrollment. In phase one, we had an announcement of a study that had just been completed. The graph on page 36 is a picture of what could have been had there been level funding and only modest increases in tuition. Slide 37 gives you a little more detail about that research study that was conducted. Specifically, the first bullet, for each 10% fall in state funding, our headcount is estimated to decrease 4.5%. Most of that impact, 3 out of 4.5%, is attributed to tuition increases. So clearly, there are some students that can continue to maintain their college going, who cannot. Juxtapose that to the growing number of high school graduates. This is a graph that shows you public high school graduates through the year 2017-18. There is expected to be a 10.6% increase in over 2001-02 in high school graduates. And we know that somewhere between 30 and 35% of all high school graduates find their way to community colleges. Almost half of those students who proceed on to a post-secondary, more than half of high school graduates that proceed on to post-secondary education choose the community college. I don't know about you, but I look at a number, a 10% increase, and recognize that we don't have sufficient capacity to accept them. The footnote here is that short-term over the next two biennium is an increase of almost 5%. Slide 39 looks at the income level of those high school graduates. And by 2012-13, 53% of Oregon's high school graduates will have a family income of $50,000 or less. And that's about 5 points higher than the national average. Clearly, we're going to need to not only have capacity for them to proceed to post-secondary education, but we're going to need to have an increase in financial aid to support them. Slide 40 looks at Oregon's adult population. It's growing at a much higher rate than the national average. There are some data here that shows that Oregon is at 21.7% of our adult population, and this is 18 and over. And yes, I would expect that this does include some of our retiring community. But when you look a little deeper at the literacy needs of Oregonians, on slide 41, it shows you that in Oregon, 25% of adult Oregonians have a limited literacy capacity. They have completed less than 8 years of schooling. So we.
Yes, I would like to point out the antithesis of that, that 75% of those illiterate Oregonians have received 8 years or more of schooling. That's a rhetorical comment.
So we, I'm not going to call this a perfect storm, although it has been referred to that by others, that we have an increasing need of both young people and adults to increase their skill while we have limited and perhaps even continuing a decline in capacity of your post-secondary sector, and I'm particularly interested in the community college sector. So to wrap up, today we have provided the committee with a major changes where we have been able to improve service delivery and budget drivers for community colleges and the workforce development system. All of this impacts your decisions, and we'll have more specifics about the budget detail tomorrow. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Any questions? Thank you very much for the presentation. Just so the committee is aware of the schedule, tomorrow we will be back on community colleges. Next week we will have four of the licensing commissions on Monday. And Tuesday is going to be a hearing day for us in a very real sense, in the sense that we have an OHSU hearing in the morning, and we have a full education hearing on all education budgets in the evening on Tuesday. And then we are, I'm sorry, I misspoke. That is correct. But, or I almost misspoke. Wednesday and Thursday.
Yeah.
Okay, I did misspeak. Tuesday, the hearing in the morning is OHSU, so Oregon Health Sciences University. And then Wednesday and Thursday is OHSU. So that's the schedule for next week. Senator Gordley will be chairing tomorrow. I will not be here. So with that, I will close the hearing on SB 5506 and close the committee until tomorrow morning.